Next. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh my goodness! Pod Vader is fired up for this week's edition of Next Fan Up. I am Pod Vader. I am joined by three very capable super fans. Nick, who represents the Chiefs. Nick, what's happening there?
Not too much. Just hanging on after a long week of work and a bit of a cold. Hope I don't get it on you guys.
Please do not give us a cold over the internet waves. That would not be good. I have Brian here, who represents the Cowboys. What's happening, Brian?
Big news out of Dallas this week. We've had a terrific week, Jerry being Jerry again, so I'm ready to chop that up with you guys.
Mm-hmm. We will definitely get to a lot of Cowboys news. And Adam represents the Lions. Adam, what's happening?
Hey, Jay. Just hoping I don't hear anything out of Allen Park like we're hearing out of Jacksonville.
Yes, that is not good. So, folks, we are going to be talking today about Dante Fowler and the Jaguars. Bad news out of Jacksonville. We, as you know, we'll be talking about the Cowboys. Lots of things going on with the Cowboys from the draft and obviously post-draft. And then we'll get into it with the Chiefs and the Lions. We'll also mention emails that we received to nextfanup@gmail.com. A couple of guys looking to become super fans in their own right. And that's how you do it. Send your applications to nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Twitter, NFU Podcast, and on Facebook. Search Next Fan Up or go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. And, of course, you all know why Pod Vader's fired up, as he is quite possibly the most ultimate Patriots fan in the world. A lot of people like to call me a homer, and I get it. But I have hoped and I pray that people have seen and understood that I am probably one of the most unbiased homer fans there possibly is. And that is also a contradiction in terms. But the Wells report to me is an absolute outrage. And it's not so much whether or not the Patriots cheated or not. I'm not disputing that fact. What I'm disputing is the way the report was written in and of itself. All right? I understand that this is not a court of law and that you're not innocent until proven guilty when you're dealing with a problem investigated internally within your place of employment, which is what the Wells report has done for the NFL. My problem is that everything that is being said in the media, one, is completely taken out of context, and proper context hasn't been given to the general public. Two, the commissioner has yet to give a punishment because it appears he is looking to see what the court of public opinion is bringing, and then he'll make his decision as to how he's going to punish the Patriots and more specifically Tom Brady. Three, the general grade that the NFL is using to base these punishments on is that of more probable than not. And my problem with more probable than not is that it is clearly a subjective terminology. Okay? When you're talking about text messages that were sent in the month of October about a ball that was overinflated by a referee to 16 PSI, and they're talking about deflating the ball, and they didn't actually use those words in those text messages, it is more probable than not that those text messages are referring to a ball at 16 PSI, which is over the legal max. But because this investigation takes place after a time period where balls were found to be under the legal allowable limit, it is inferred that these messages are referring to something completely different. And that, in and of itself, is unfair. It is more probable than not, and I'm sorry that I'm going on this diatribe. You guys can jump in and stop me whenever you want. But it is more probable than not when a man walks into a bathroom and he's in literally 1 minute and 24 seconds, that he's going to take a leak. He's not in there removing air from a football. Because it's also more probable than not that a quarterback and a coach who are control freaks about how these footballs should feel don't want the guy to go into a bathroom and just randomly allow a bit of air to be measured. I am so frustrated by the way that this report was done. How can people look at the science of the matter when the readings from gauges are completely different? And readings from the same gauge on the one intercepted football were taken three times with three different measurements, and the third measurement was higher than the other two. So you can't even say that, well, when they took the readings the first two times, they let air out of the ball, because the third measurement was the highest of the three. Like, there's no science here. The gauges are clearly inaccurate. You can't apply science to it. And the report itself said that the experts that they hired couldn't do science properly because they'd have to assume certain facts that they don't know. It blows my mind how big this has become and how easy it is to just say, you can't prove anything.
Okay, Pod. Step away from the ledge. Step away. Let me just run a few things by you here. And first of all, I'm going to be the first to say that I have not had a chance to read through the report, so I can't. I'm looking at this from a bit of a broader view, and I understand your complaints and your points about the fact that this is, you know, they're going with the more probable than not stuff. There's all this kind of stuff here and there, and I know that you're looking through this as a defense lawyer because you are the Patriots homer and finding inconsistencies. But look, I mean, first of all, as you said, it's not a court of law. And by the way, in a court of law, there's recently a capital murder case where a certain Patriots player was sentenced for a murder when they did not have a murder weapon. They don't really understand the motive, and there's circumstantial evidence that he was even there. I mean, the fact is that this is the sort of thing that can happen, but we're talking about a workplace here where, you know, if you were accused of peeing in your coworker's coffee, they don't necessarily, your boss doesn't have to prove that, you know, that all of the DNA evidence is there and things like that. If they're pretty sure based on circumstantial evidence that something might have happened and you didn't cooperate with the investigation, they absolutely can reprimand you. I mean, that's what we're talking about here.
See, that, and I'm perfectly fine with that. If they decide that they want to suspend Brady because he did not fully cooperate with the investigation by providing his cell phone, which I, by the way, can completely understand why he doesn't want to provide his cell phone. He's Tom Brady. I'm sure there's things on that cell phone that other people don't need to see. You know,
I'm sure there's things on that phone that other people would like to see.
I'm sure there are. And I'm sure they involve Gisele Bündchen. But, you know, I think if they want to suspend him for not fully cooperating with the investigation, I can understand that, and I can actually accept that. But if they want to suspend him based on the facts, quote unquote, that were provided in the Wells report, you can't, because all of those facts can be led to a different argument of what is more probable than not. People are pointing out the text where Bird, or Jim McNally, labeled himself as the deflator. Well, that text came on May 9th of 2014. He could be referring to literally anything, but because there are other text messages in October, and then there's text messages in January, they're linking it all together to say, well, he's obviously labeling himself the deflator because he's deflating football. He could have referred to himself as the deflator, as the guy who shows up at a party and brings everybody down on May 9th. There's literally no evidence that he's deflating football in the text messages from May 9th. But you put X, Y, and Z together after – you can't. You literally cannot put all those things together. It drives me insane. Completely drives me insane.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues, and you've talked about how the media has been reporting this, we're a headline-driven culture, we're a sensationalist culture. We want the big headlines. We're not going to put A, B, C, D, E together. We want X right in front of us that jumps out. And that's what the media has been giving us, which has in turn given the opinion of Brady is guilty of cheating. And ultimately we see cheating, and, you know, with all the other injustices in sports, off the field, we can kind of compartmentalize that. When it comes to cheating on the field, like, fans are going to lose their mind over that because that's directly affecting the game that they love, the game that they're watching. And again, we go back to the whole preponderance thing, that they don't need to prove 100% that Brady did anything or was aware or knew anything. But if it's more probable than not, I hate the phrasing. Good Lord, I wish they could just make that sound better. There has to be a way, some legalese, to make that sound better. But if we're going with more probable than not, that's enough for me to be like, there's something going on here that Brady needs to be punished for, and he's going to be punished for. But I do agree with the fact that Goodell is seemingly waiting to see what the vibe is from the fans, from media, as to what the punishment is going to be. Now, I saw Olbermann suggesting a year. That's ridiculous. That's him trying to get his own headlines again. But putting this in the context of, you know, the Falcons pumping in stadium noise, or Ray Farmer texting from the sideline for the Browns, how do you put that in context? Is going to be difficult. And I think Goodell is actually, in his case, doing a smart thing by kind of gauging the public opinion. It's something he hasn't been doing before, so it's going to help him out. Will it be necessarily the fairest to Brady and the Patriots? I don't know, but I don't think a lot of people care at this point. They're the champs, and people are going to hate on them because of that. So whatever punishment he gets, I think it's going to sound fair to most people because Goodell is going to base it off of that exactly.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know if I want my commissioner basing his decisions on the court of public opinion, because it's pretty clear at this point that there's a wall around Foxborough, and the Patriot fans are behind that wall, and literally the rest of America is on the outside of that wall attacking it. And it's and that's what it feels like at this point.
You know that a lot of that is because of reputation, though, as well. I mean, obviously, you know, there is the Spygate thing hanging over this, and there's also Bountygate. I mean, if you look at, you know, we were in the same situation, basically, just flipped on New Orleans when it was the Bountygate scandal going on, and you had all the, you know, New Orleans fans defending their team, and they also didn't ever get anyone to admit that, yes, we took a bounty or we paid a bounty in order to injure or knock another player out of the game. And yet there are major suspensions for that, major fines and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's the same situation. It's now been repeated here. And I do think that, you know, there's a lot of criticisms you can make of the process. I don't know why it took this long. And, you know, and especially if they took, what it was like 100 days, 100 something days to come up with the fact that, yeah, we still sort of think that they deflated balls. And look, maybe that's enough to punish, and that's fine. But I think they could have moved this through a lot faster, and we wouldn't even be talking about it if, you know, a few weeks after the Super Bowl, it had been like, yeah, we're pretty sure that they deflated balls, but they're not supposed to do. Here's a, you know, suspension or penalty X.
I'm kind of with you guys, except I don't, this may just be me, I don't think it's really that big of a deal. I mean, when you look at the numbers in the Wells report, it looks like they might have overstated the average deflation. They claimed about 2 PSI. It looked like it was maybe 1.5 on average. They say that may have something to do with the Patriots having that ridiculously low fumble rate over the last year or two. I don't know if I buy that. But I agree with you guys. I think the big thing is that they didn't, Brady didn't cooperate. And I think if they just came out and decided it may have been a fine to whoever was involved, maybe a suspension, but I doubt it. But I think they're going to nail Brady to the wall for not going along with this investigation. Something that I actually didn't even realize until I heard you going on your tear-ridden tirade pod was that, being a longtime Lions fan, I'm accustomed to pain, and there are certain, certain terms in the vernacular that you hear and still just send, you know, broken glass up your spine. And for us Lions fans, it's complete the process. The Calvin Johnson rule from a couple years ago that came back and bit us. I cannot, every time something happens and the words complete the process come up, it hurts to my core. And now more probable than not is your guys's. So that makes me happy a little bit. I apologize for enjoying your pain, but There's your own complete process.
You know what? Honestly, I believe the 2015 Patriots, you know, 2014 was.
But we're on to Cincinnati.
2015 is going to be all about more probable than not. And and it's going to drive me insane all season. You know, you mentioned Bounty Gate. The only thing I would say different between Bounty Gate and what's going on here with the Wells report, because I'm refusing to call this Deflate Gate. Why does everything, by the way, have to be gate? But it's stupid. Let's move on and become a little bit more creative. What was that? Ball what?
Balghazi.
Balghazi. Yeah, I like that. Ball is awesome.
From that, we'll pass our first edict here on the next Fan Up podcast. From here on out, it is known as Balghazi. The difference between Bounty Gate and Balghazi is that Bounty Gate actually had to do. There was a smoking gun in that there was actually a guy saying, "Hey, I'm getting paid to knock this guy out," right? And they were talking about knocking guys out, injuring them, possibly ruining their careers, whereas Balghazi is dealing with the underinflation of balls, which, by the way, I mentioned this before. I had my own 11-year-old go out and throw balls at the different PSIs. And do you know how hard it is to throw a flat football? It's extremely difficult.
Like, well, to go back to your other point, if that's not science, I don't know what is.
Seriously. But to top that, I would equate like the PSI in a football as going 26 in a 25 mile per hour zone, right? It's like 1 mile per hour over. Yes, you're technically speeding, but I mean, are you really breaking the law? Again, in the black and white world, yes, you are. But seriously, 26 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone, most cops aren't even going to pull you over and give you a ticket for that.
Anyway, y'all got caught in a speed trap. So, I guess at this point, what I'm most interested in is what do we expect the punishment for Brady to be, and what do we think it should be?
I'm okay with them suspending. If they say that they're suspending Tom Brady for not actively participating in the investigation, in an NFL investigation, if they say that that's a 4-game suspension, then I'm cool with it, because I believe there's precedence to that. Not, you know, if they give him anything more than 4 games, it's preposterous. And if they base their suspension on what was said in the Wells report, well, then it becomes even more preposterous to me, because everything that's written in the Wells report can easily be ripped apart, and you can determine that different factors of it are more probable than not, depending on how you're looking at the evidence that is presented to you.
I'm actually surprised to hear you say 4 games. I even think 2 is legitimate enough for me. But I do agree with you. If it goes anything past 4, we're talking about, you know, a third of the season, half of the season. Goodell's lost his ever loving mind at that point. It's you know, trying to get back that power that he's somewhat lost. I'm expecting 2 games, but at this point, it's a crapshoot. You never really know.
Anybody else have an opinion on the suspension and what it should be and what we expect it to be?
Not exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, I think it's going to be a short suspension and some sort of knock against the organization in terms of a fine or something for, you know, I don't know, not cooperating more or something like that. But I would hope it's not something nuts, so we can stop talking about this.
I will say John Jastrzemski and Jim McNally, both those two guys should be fired immediately. I don't think that there's any question that those two men can no longer be allowed in an NFL locker room. I think that's beyond obvious. And
are you sure they're not already face down in a ditch somewhere? I mean,
I will say when you're talking about Boston fans, it's something you should be a little worried about, John and Jim. And I say that jokingly, and I hope everyone understands that that was a joke. It's more probable than not that I was joking there. Please take it as such. Thank you. I will also add that No, I'm not going to add it. Never mind. But I saw Teddy Bruschi and Damian Woody go head to head about the Wells report. And, you know, Damian Woody, who played 2 years as Brady's center and then was cast off unceremoniously, surprisingly enough, thought that Brady's a liar. Teddy Bruschi, who's a lifelong Patriot and clearly is very loyal to the team and knows Tom Brady pretty well because they're best of buds and hang out all the time, finds that Tom Brady is telling the truth. And he did mention that, you know, if somebody told him the name Jim McNally, Bruschi had no idea who the heck you're talking about. But when he looked at the picture and he goes, oh, that's Bird. That, to me, it's more probable than not that Tom Brady, who did not have text messages or phone calls with Jim McNally, as presented in the Wells report, doesn't know who Jim McNally is. He knows who Bird is because that's what they refer to him as. Doesn't know who Jim McNally is. Anyway,
Pod, I have one more question for you before we move on from this topic. Bill Belichick, amazing coach, you know, detail oriented almost to a fault, borderline neurotic. He's got his hands in every aspect of everything that goes on that football field. In your opinion, what are the odds that he did not know that was going on?
The odds are slim to none, and slim went on vacation. Listen, but you mentioned that, and so to me, it is more probable than not that the head coach doesn't want the balls just randomly deflated without knowing exactly what the pressure is inside those balls, right? You can't just randomly deflate a ball and go, okay, here you go. Go play with this. Like, that's not what a control freak is going to do. The control freak wants the ball deflated a certain amount to a certain PSI, right? Because he's gone and he's done the science, quote unquote, of what the ball should actually be. Like, he's not just going to want the ball randomly deflated just with a, let's just put a needle and deflate this ball and make it flat. Like, that's not what a control freak is going to do. I don't understand why people think that that is more probable than not. Anyway.
All right. That satisfied me. We can try to get your blood pressure down now.
I'm done. This isn't necessarily going to relax my blood pressure, but it is sort of one of those freak accidents that happen in the NFL all the time that just ends up breaking your heart. And of course, it happens to a team that can't afford to have these freak accidents happen. And I'm now talking about Dante Fowler Jr., who tore his ACL in camp. If you go and watch the video online, it's pretty obvious. Like, his leg is fully extended and then it just twists. And as soon as I saw the video, before it was confirmed, I was like, yep, that's an ACL tear. It's exactly how I tore my ACL playing tennis. A fully extended leg twisted. It's just how it happens. And it happened within the first hour of him practicing with the Jaguars. It's one could argue, why are they doing full contact practices within the first hour? But
that is one of the first things you think looking at that video. I mean, what was going on there looked like 11 on 11, fairly intense stuff. I mean, I think he put like some kind of a swim move looking guy on the right tackle that was trying to block him at the time. And I didn't think you're supposed to be doing that this early. That was interesting.
Yeah, to me, that seems to be – that would be the one thing that I would question. But let's get Ryan, who's our Jaguar super fan, opinion here. He wasn't able to join us. He actually was originally scheduled to be on this show but was taken away for work. Work? What's that? I mean, seriously. It does work these days. But Ryan sent in this email and says, I was reading live tweets from the Jaguars opening day of rookie minicamp. You see a little bit of, here's a pic of Rashad Green stretching and Yeldon with some nice agility. Then you read that Dante Fowler is on the ground holding his knee and has to be carted off. This didn't happen on the first day. It happened in the first hour. There's literally nothing worse that could have happened at rookie minicamp. It's a crippling blow to the Jaguars' defensive plans. Fowler was drafted to play the Leo position and expected to be a star player given that he was taken so high. Now the Jags have to wait a year to see him play a single down. As completely unfair and disappointing as this has been, it isn't the end of the Jags' season. The D-line was the team's strength last year and will still play at a high level. Fowler's injury mainly prevents them from becoming a potentially elite defense. I expect that unit to play well, with Blake Bortles and the offense really determine how the season goes? While Blake Bortles and the offense really depend how the season goes. Still, the CNET rookie minicamp, I can say with 100% certainty, that's not what getting better looks like. Go Jag, Ryan. I don't know so much about the Jags being an elite defense just with Dante Fowler, but it is a clear blow to their defense, and I'm not exactly sure it's anything that could necessarily be avoidable. It's just a freak accident.
Right, and I did read that this isn't totally unprecedented. A couple of years ago, Melvin Ingram tore his ACL in May and was able to come back in December, so mid-December. So, you know, you're definitely not looking at much of a season, but it's not – a total given that he's going to miss the entirety of the season at this point.
At this point, though, you can't go on that 6-month recovery and expect the Jaguars to be competitors in the playoffs, right? That'd really be the only reason why you would put him on the PUP and not on the IR.
Good. Correct. I can't argue that.
Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, as a Chiefs fan, where, you know, we've had long stretches of the last couple of decades where we've really mired in the doldrums and just how despairing that is, and I'm sure my colleague from Detroit can also also understand this. And my heart does go out to the Jaguars fans. It's just, you know, right when you start to see things kind of cresting the hill, then you get another really big blow that was, you know, just comes out of nowhere.
So we also see that the first player picked in the last 3 years, there's been maybe there's a little curse. The first defensive player picked in the draft last year, Jadeveon Clowney played, I believe, 4 games. And for the 2015 season, we've got Jordan, the Miami Dolphins, suspended for a year. I mean, this is it's becoming a trend. You know, 3 makes a trend. It's going to be interesting to see. Now, is this more, though, a case of teams making a reach on a player that might be sort of questionable, or is this just literally a freak coincidence?
I think without a doubt, this is just a freak coincidence, but we are a reactionary league, and I would be shocked if teams didn't start adjusting a little bit how they approach these rookie minicamps, how they approach OTAs. I really liked what Jacksonville was doing last year, especially this year in the draft with some of the guys they added. I thought T.J. Yeldon had an outside chance to be the offensive rookie of the year, along with Fowler possibly being defensive rookie of the year. I really liked what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And in a time when, like, this is the hope springs eternal of the NFL, you get these new rookies in, you see what they can do, and to just have Jacksonville, who's already just gone through so much, have to deal with this, you kind of just feel sorry for Jacksonville, for their fans, for having to endure another setback like this. It'll be interesting to see how they respond this year, and how Fowler responds in the future, what kind of effect this will have on his career. But hopefully he can get back, and all that promise that we saw, we'll see on the field next year.
And what's interesting about all this is that usually when you lose a player like that, you go, oh, how are we going to replace him? And Ryan mentions that the starting Leo will likely be Chris Clemons again. And he noted the defense really came on strong at the end of the year for the Jaguars. So they should still be okay at the very least in terms of that. And other pass rushers on the roster, Andre Branch, who he labels as good. Ryan Davis is good. Chris Smith as a who knows. So I would actually probably use who knows on both those other two players as well. But that's just me. Let's move on now to the Dallas Cowboys, Brian. And it's been an interesting week for the Dallas Cowboys, for sure. They went into the draft and got a guy in the third round who many thought would be a first round player. And then an undrafted signee ends up coming to Dallas, and he was also projected as a first round player. Why don't you talk about the Cowboys and what's been happening there in Dallas?
Oh, you know, it's always an interesting Wee Jerry world. And I bet we've been rolling out the ticker tape for Lael Collins. What a gift. And honestly, I've heard other teams that are just like, really, like, this happened to the Cowboys, and we're just a fortunate team at this point. This never should have happened. He never should have fallen in our laps. But the Lael Collins situation, watching how it progressed – and how you guys talked about it last week on the podcast to where would a team take a chance on him later on? And I think we kind of knew the answer was no, because you had a guy who was part of a murder investigation. And what kind of statement does that say at that point to draft a guy like that? So it made sense for him to go undrafted. And I think his team got out in front of it and saying that if he wasn't drafted in the second or third round, he would just re-enter the draft next year. And then we later found out that that wasn't going to be allowed to happen, that, of course, he's going to be an undrafted free agent. But by saying that he put the ball in his own court, that he gets to choose what team he wants to go to. And I can't remember a situation ever like this. And so to see all the different teams kind of try to court them in their little Rex Ryan, for the love of God, if you're trying to court a first round talent, don't take him to Applebee's. Just maybe you could do a little bit better than that. Red Lobster, maybe. But when you come to Dallas, Jerry rolls out the red carpet. He had Romo there. He had Frederick there. He had Tyron Smith there. He had Zach Martin there. And he sold Collins on the fact that they are going to put together the best offensive line in the league. And as Collins said in his press conference, in NFL history, and that's complete hyperbole at this point, but you're essentially going to have four first round talents on that line. A lot of people think he'll move into to guard to take Ronald Leary's spot. I actually think he's going to slide to right tackle, take Doug Free's spot. Doug Free becomes that swing tackle. But it's amazing to see this group. Now, I talked in a previous podcast about just the pride that Dallas has in this offensive line, and it's gone to another stratosphere with this. So we're excited to see whichever running back will be behind it, which we don't quite know at this point necessarily who it might be, but what they can do behind it. You add that onto the fact that we got Byron Jones, who seems like, you know, forever ago that we drafted him in the first round, a rangy cornerback, a lot in Devin McCourty sense of he could move to safety depending on how Morris Claiborne comes back from his knee injury. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do with Byron Jones. But I love the athleticism. I love the versatility. I was surprised that he was even there at 27. I thought those top four cornerbacks between him and Trey Waynes and Marcus Peters and Kevin Johnson, I thought they would all be long gone by the time Dallas was picking. And when he was still there, I guarantee Jerry and Steven and Jason Garrett were sitting in that draft room discussing Byron Jones versus Randy Gregory. I imagine Jerry wanted to take Randy Gregory right then. Probably got voted down at that point. Steven won out. They made the smart pick, the safe pick, in Byron Jones. You come around to pick 60 in round two and Randy Gregory's still sitting there. I guarantee there was no conversation at that point. They knew they were taking Randy Gregory. To have a top 10 talent, arguably now the best edge rusher in the draft, fall to you late in the second round. I know we have all the off-field stuff. He's made some moronic, stupid decisions. How you fail a drug test at the combine, I will never understand. But the Cowboys believe that
it's more probable than not that he didn't understand it either.
Oh yeah, it's more probable than everything at that point. But Randy Gregory, the Cowboys, I think Jerry Jones still suffers from Randy Moss disease from when he passed on that elite talent because of the off the field issues, and he's never forgiven himself for it. That's why he drafted Dez 5 years ago, and that's why he drafted Randy Gregory, and they're going to give him the Dez treatment. If you've already seen, they've got his number. He's going to wear 94, the same 94 as Charles Haley, the same 94 as DeMarcus Ware, just like they did with Dez, giving him 88. They're putting this kid on the path to really get him right. And he's acknowledged all of the transgressions so far. And he sounds all in. He's saying all the right things. We'll see what happens when he's actually on the field, when he's on his own off the field. But he's saying all the right things. And personally, to have three first-round talents like this come in, we're already playing in the Super Bowl parade, to be honest. I mean, we're doing that every year in Dallas, to be honest. But, you know, to have those talents come in and to have them buy in the way they did, it's an exciting time. And, you know, possibly we're not done could move that first round draft pick next year. Jerry didn't say who it was for, but I think we all know who he was hinting at without exactly saying it. So the Adrian Peterson door is still open. And if that happens, the skies of Dallas will be officially become the most annoying team in the NFL yet again, taking the mantle from your Patriots pod.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this year if that can be surpassed, but I definitely think the Cowboys become very interesting with Adrian Peterson. And I do apologize. I was referring to Randy Gregory as I set you up, and I called him a third-round pick. He was a second-round pick. Chaz Green's very good, but I don't know if he was a first-round grade or not. Yeah, I think it's interesting with the Cowboys, right? So they go and they've made these moves, and they're risky moves, right? Randy Gregory could easily slip up again. I mean, he slipped up at the combine. So having him slip up at some point during the season is certainly more probable than not.
Every time I hear you say that now, Jay.
Lyle Collins, I mean, he hasn't been cleared yet. And who knows if he will be cleared. But as was mentioned, there was evidence used against another player in a murder trial, and he was convicted of murder. So it's more probable than not that Lyle Collins still has a long road to go in a courtroom. These are all risky moves, but they're all moves that if they pay off, does put the Cowboys in the conversation as Super Bowl contenders.
And I think with the fact that that window is closing with Romo at the helm, and we're going to take every advantage we can to maximize that window, to get all the talent here we can get. If we have to take those risks, we'll take those risks. My biggest fear with Randy Gregory is that he turns out to be Demetrius Underwood, and that there's some, because they've already talked about the mental side of things, that he might not be just all there. And if that's the case, well, then that risk is certainly not going to pan out. But they're going to take all the steps that they need to take to give him the best opportunity. And with all, like I said, with all the talent that they have here, unfortunately, the excuses are gone. Like, it's Super Bowl. It's really Super Bowl or bust for us now with everything that we've done. And again, if we get Peterson in here, forget about it. That's going to be the expectation. But one thing's for sure, it's going to be an interesting watch with Randy Gregory. Josh Brent probably won't be around. That was another one with his vehicular manslaughter. So we have all these characters, all these personalities to juggle. It'll be an interesting watch for sure. Hopefully it doesn't blow up in their faces. I don't think it'll blow up in their faces, but it'll be a lot to keep track of in Dallas.
I mean, it was Nick or Adam, were either of you two hoping that your team had reached out to Lyle Collins and signed him?
Oh, absolutely. I was really hoping that the Chiefs would grab him in the seventh round. I really don't understand why no team didn't. I mean, you know, as listeners will know, he's the guy that I picked in the Superfan Super Mock Draft. And I really do think it's tragic what happened. I mean, obviously, you know, if he is guilty, then, you know, all bets are off. He deserves probably what's coming to him. But, you know, I just don't understand why no other team would just throw a seventh round pick at him. I mean, it's bad PR, especially after Aaron Hernandez and all that kind of stuff and the sensitivity. But, I mean, you can just say, you can be honest. Like, look, I mean, this investigation, we just heard about this like a week before the draft. We don't know anything. They say he's not a suspect. We're buying that for now. He's an extremely talented kid. And look, if it turns out that he had something more to do with it than it seems now, then we're going to cut ties with him immediately. We don't have to sign him to a contract as a seventh-round pick immediately. We're going to wait and see. And if not, like, you know, losing a seventh-round pick is nothing. I mean, if you look at the percentages of, you know, when they show in each round, like what percentage of players drafted in those rounds are still on an NFL roster, you know, 3 years later, it's like 5 to 10% of seventh round picks are still around. I mean, those are total throwaway picks. I really wish the Chiefs would have grabbed him.
Yeah, I agree with the Lions as well. I really liked Lyle Collins, and I would have taken him in the mock if he would have made it to me at 23. And I think the thing that's easy to forget here is you look at this situation and the fact that they passed on him because he's part of this investigation, it's easy to kind of think, oh, well, he's a character arrest. He's flaky. He's really not. And assuming he's cleared of all charges and stuff. And as you said, if you know, he's found guilty, then he deserves whatever he gets. But outside of that, he's a very high character guy, takes care of business on and off the field, was a team captain last year. You know, he checks all the boxes as far as character goes. For a guy you'd want on your team and want in your locker room. So it's not really fair to assign him that designation, which we'll go over later, the Lions really value. I really wish they would have taken a swing on him at some point. But, you know, he went to Big D, and we'll see what happens. Just another reason for me to not care for the team down south.
And I think it's all about the culture that we're in right now with all the domestic violence, with all this off the field. If this was 5 years ago, I think absolutely someone would have taken him on day three. He might not have even made it to day three. But with everyone so caught up with all the off the field stuff, it would be a hard sell to your fan base of why you just drafted a guy who's tied to a murder investigation. Now I completely agree with the character part of it. If any player wants to be the poster boy of how you nail a press conference, he did it in his introductory press conference. Not exactly sure why we're having an introductory press conference for an undrafted free agent. I know he's a special case.
That's what
but
Jerry does.
He puts on a show, that's for sure. And this was amazing. He was in tears. His mom was in tears. He had Jerry Jones in tears. He nailed it. He said everything that you would want to hear from someone in that situation. He's definitely bought in. And I'm looking at him, much like Byron Jones, as a very positive character influence in that locker room. And we're going to need all the positive influences we can get at this point.
I mean, that is true. I mean, the Cowboys now have a couple of characters on that team that sort of give them an aura of maybe the old Raiders used to have, you know, maybe even an aura that the Lions had just a couple years ago, of that, you know, we are mean, nasty, and maybe a little bit dirty. But we're gonna go out there and we're gonna hit you in the mouth.
Exactly. Teams are gonna hate us, fans are gonna hate us, and we're gonna love the fact that everyone hates us. That's really Cowboys Nation at this point, is just that us against the world mentality. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this all plays out on the field, and hopefully they all get on the field.
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
There it is.
You know, I've gotten used to not hitting the buttons. I want to get back to hitting the buttons. I meant to hit this when I was talking about the Wells report.
We couldn't do diddly poo.
Yeah, that's what the Wells report was. Diddly poo. All right. Nick, let's talk about the Chiefs and how you're feeling after the NFL draft for your Kansas City team.
Well, I think it was an overall good draft. It was one that I think the pundits didn't really know how to grade really well, because it was not a super flashy draft. The Chiefs didn't have really huge glaring needs going into it. They mostly filled up depth in a lot of positions, and they went with guys that were sort of off the radar, at least off my radar, but that scouts that were looking at all of them said they're really impressed with. Marcus Peters was an interesting one, and while we're talking about character, I mean, I think that's another one of those real issues. I mean, this is a guy who is possibly the best corner in college football and got kicked off of his team. He's definitely the best, most talented player on his team. He was a guy who I honestly didn't have on my own Supermax draft board, just because I'm very much of the opinion, the philosophy in football of, I would rather have a high character, reliable guy with inferior talent and just, you know, have a team of guys, you know, are going to work well together. But, you know, after Andy Reid came out and John Dorsey talked about how they vetted him, I mean, apparently Reid is fairly close to his college coach, the coach that kicked him off the team. And, you know, and it was a sort of thing where, Yeah, the kid obviously had a big head. Went into they had a new coaching staff. He was mouthing off. There was apparently, they claimed there was never any physical altercation. But basically, you mouth off to new coaches enough. The new coaches that are the new sheriff in town, they at some point have to lay down the law and make an example, even if it's the best player, and booted him off. And he's been totally remorseful since then, said he was immature and all of that. He said the right thing since then. So it'll be interesting. I was also heartened by what our Eagles superfan kind of told me. He said that, that Andy Reid has a long track record of being able to shepherd these somewhat off the path guys. And so that looks good. If he turns out to be able to use his talent and not, stay on the field, not be suspended and turn around his character stuff, then he's going to be, he looks like he's a solid corner for a decade for us, which is great. It's something we definitely need. And overall, though, it seems like a lot of the draft reaction to the Chiefs was that they didn't pick a wide receiver, in the first two rounds. And that was something that I wanted to rant about, actually, when we were on the mock draft, but I didn't. And I want to rant about it now, which is that I think, this is...
Go for it, rant! It's a ranting show! Let's all get into a good rant!
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure I can reach your amped up ranting levels of the Wells report, but I do think this has just been the most, the biggest sort of pedestrian obsession with the Chiefs is the wide receiver stat. If you know nothing about the Chiefs, you know that their wide receivers did not catch a single touchdown last year. And it is just the most annoying thing to Chiefs fans because, it's one thing that, pointed out that, our wide receivers were pretty crappy last year, but people using that as a shorthand for Chiefs can't score points and Chiefs don't have, an offense that can take them places. I think part of it is because, the Chiefs are a small market team. Not many people watch Chiefs games. I know that Pod watched at least one Chiefs game last year, a certain 41-14 matchup early in the season.
After that game. It was over.
Yeah. I would say Pod would say that, that the Chiefs did not need more wide receiver production in that game. That's the issue. The Chiefs were very close to getting the playoffs with poor play at both the offensive line and the wide receiver position. And the deal playoffs. Is that – but with Jeremy Maclin actually had more production in almost every statistical category than all of the Chiefs receivers combined. He automatically fixes – and doesn't entirely fix the group, but for the Chiefs' purposes, I think he sort of does. There's been – the pundits keep on saying over and over and over, the Chiefs need to find a number two receiver. The Chiefs need to find a number two receiver. And it's this obsession on this idea that there is a single schematic for a successful team. And the fact is that the Chiefs, the way they want to play, they want to throw the ball about 20 times a game. It's obvious that their offense goes through Jamal Charles. And when you look at, 20 passes a game, you're going to want to put 10 of those balls towards Maclin, right? You want to put a few of them towards Travis Kelce. And Charles is really good in the screen game and the short pass game. He lines up at wide receiver. And frankly, last year, if his, the letters in front of his name were WR, he would have been the best wide receiver on our team. So how many of those balls do you want to take away from Charles, Maclin, Kelce, to throw to some second round pick at the second wide receiver spot? It doesn't make any sense to me. I think the Chiefs, both with bringing in Maclin and the part of their draft that I think people forget about was the trade with a fifth round pick to get guard Ben Grubbs off of the New Orleans Saints. Those units are not going to be the best in the league, by no stretch of the imagination. But just by putting in those solid guys, they've moved themselves back into the average. They're going to be middle of the road. Both in the passing game and in terms of just their overall offensive line production. But the fact they got to 9-7 and beat both the Super Bowl teams with nothing at those positions last year says that I think these are the things that are going to allow them to take the next step. And honestly, I think with the changes to the Broncos over the offseason, it's now really crowded, and I think it's basically a three-way tie in the division between the Chargers, Chiefs, and Broncos. And I think even more widely, this is something we haven't really talked about. I think ranking the AFC overall is pretty interesting. I think personally, it's basically the Patriots and the Colts more or less at the top, although we'll see what happens with the Wells suspensions. But then there's kind of a crowded group of like Steelers, Ravens, Chargers, Chiefs, Broncos. I don't even know who else you'd throw in there. But either way, I mean, and I don't think ranking them within that group is really that meaningful at this point. It's a big, crowded group of teams at that second tier in the AFC. And I think the Chiefs are there.
I think I agree with you on that point. I think there's definitely a coming back down. The top teams of the AFC are coming back down, with maybe the exception of the Colts. The Colts still seem to be going on an upward trajectory, but they were coming from that middle of the pack that you're talking about right now. I definitely see the Broncos coming back to earth. I have no faith in the Broncos, and I really can't wait to talk to the Broncos superfan at some point on this podcast, because if I'm the Broncos superfan right now, I am not feeling very comfortable going into the season. Clearly, the Patriots are coming down, and depending on the length of suspension of Tom Brady, I mean, you can only rely on Jimmy Garoppolo so much. He does look like the future, but he's certainly not Tom Brady. And are there enough weapons around Garoppolo that he can fill in okay for Brady? I don't know. You mentioned the Chiefs game. I mean, Tom Brady in that Chiefs game did not look good. So, I mean, there's no reason why you can expect Jimmy Garoppolo to be Tom Brady. And I think the Patriots come back down to earth. It's the AFC is interesting. I know Brian and Adam, you guys are in the NFC, but I mean, what are your thoughts here on the AFC and how it's shaping up? Adam, go ahead.
Okay. It's tough. I think there is a lot of movement. After the Steelers get the running back, I think they're going to be really solid this year. They're one of those teams that just never goes away. Same thing with the Ravens. I've learned to never count out the Patriots. It seems like they might have 10 things working against them, and then they just come back and go, 14-2 just despite you. I agree with the Denver regression possibility, although same thing with Peyton Manning. It's tough to rule them out. So they're always a contender. But as far as the Chiefs go, I agree that the draft may not be as shiny and as sparkly as people would want to see, but I think it was very functional, and it's going to translate well on the field. So I think you guys did pretty well.
Yeah, and yeah. I think it goes like some of it is these, you have these draft philosophy camps where, everyone, you either are drafting for needs or you're drafting best player available. But the thing is, I mean, obviously all good GMs do a bit of both. And I mean, I saw some really bad draft analysis where they're looking at the fact that, all of Chiefs draft picks more or less filled a need area. And they're like, oh, and those drafts tend to not work well. It was bad. Like, sorry, I cut you off.
When it comes to the AFC, at some point, this is going to become the Colts conference for 5 years, I think. It's going to be Andrew Luck's to run. Whether that's this year or not, I don't know. I actually think this whole Wells report thing is going to turn out to be ridiculously great motivation for the Patriots, and they're just going to be playing with the chip on their shoulder all year long. But I think the West is wide open. Again, we don't really know which Peyton Manning we're going to see. Are we going to see the one we saw at the beginning of last year, or the one who started to fall off that cliff a little bit at the end of last year? So I think it's wide open. And I absolutely love the Marcus Peters pick. He was who I had for the Cowboys in our super fan mock draft. I think you guys got the best corner hands down. And I think he fits perfectly with his press coverage style in y'all system. I think you're looking at a Pro Bowler within the first 3 to 4 years of his career. I'm not so much worried about those character concerns, but then again, I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm not really worried about character concerns ever. So I think you're going to love having Peters there. I'm interested to see how they match when they match up with the Broncos, how they align on defense. But I think the AFC, it's going to be a crapshoot this year. It's a lot of mediocrity. Pittsburgh is a team I definitely have my eye on, but it's going to be Indianapolis and New England at the top battling it out. And at some point, Indianapolis is going to take that mantle and run with it.
So, I mean, the one thing the Wells report doesn't address with the Patriots is how bad that secondary is right now. I mean,
we're not a very good football team right now, obviously.
Yeah, especially in the secondary. Adam,
you think they'll put down suspensions on that?
It's more probable than not. I would say that. Adam, let's wrap up this show talking about the Detroit Lions and their draft. I mean, obviously you've got some missing pieces there on your defensive line. The first defensive lineman you end up taking is in the fourth round. So what are your thoughts right now in Detroit?
I've gone through a pretty good gamut of thoughts on the draft that the Lions have had. And looking back at it, first of all, it's easy to say, well, they reached on a couple picks. They took guys, you know, a little too early. They took guys where they shouldn't have. But when you look back at the overall schematic of what they did, it looks like they actually took guys exactly where they wanted to take them. They had their board and they stayed true to it. And that's because Martin Mayhew's never met a trade he didn't like. He targeted guys, and our first round pick, Laken Tomlinson, we got by trading back with Denver. He's going to slide right into left guard. I've heard that he's a Larry Warford clone that might not move quite as well, but I've also heard he was the best blocker in the draft as far as within one step. So if he can take one step and touch you, he's rock solid. Moving is another issue. We'll see how that goes. But traded back to get him, also picked up Manny Ramirez, who's going to be our swing inside guy. That's going to be very valuable.
He hits home runs.
He put it two and got. What's that?
I made a bad Boston Red Sox joke. Manny Ramirez, he hit home runs.
That's just Manny being Manny. Don't worry about it.
Right, exactly.
Second round pick, Amir Abdullah. I'm crazy about it. I really like this guy. I like how the fumbles, there's two knocks against him, that he had fumble issues and that he's not a great pass blocker. Well, pass blocking will come. I don't know that there are any backs that come into the league 100% pass block ready. They all got to learn. They got to get their fundamentals down. They got to get their assignments down. That'll come with time. And the fumbles trailed off significantly in his last 2 years. That's the thing. You look at the stats, they were bad his first couple of years, and then they dropped off remarkably. And his senior year, his fumble rate was comparable to all the other top backs. So I'm not too worried about that. I know it's going to be a point of emphasis in training camp and stuff with him, but he should be okay. But then you look at the next pick. So we traded down to get Laken Tomlinson. Traded up to get Alex Carter out of Stanford, who I've heard that he might be – he has a very similar scouting report on him that Glover Quinn did when he was drafted by the Houston Texans a while ago. Not the ideal corner, which is the position he played in college, but a very smart player, a guy who can learn, who can adjust. I think he's going to be a valuable guy down the road. But we traded up to get Carter. We traded our third round next year to get into the fourth round to get Gabe Wright, who was the defensive tackle you referenced earlier. I don't know that I'm 100% sold on Gabe Wright talent-wise, but that is completely irrelevant because the Lions are. They drafted him over a couple guys that I would have preferred at the time, but they have a scouting department and I don't. But they traded the third rounder next year to get him. So they must have been pretty sold on it. He's going to be our fourth defensive tackle in the rotation. He should be and he should be all right in that role. He can plug up a gap. He can two gap. He can penetrate a little bit. That's not quite a strong point, but we'll see what happens once he gets on a pro football regimen, you know, as far as building up strength and speed. And then we traded the Michael Burton pick, the fullback that we picked up in the fifth round, was the result of a trade earlier in the draft. So, I mean, you look at this draft that the Lions had, and like I said, you think that they might have reached, they might have taken guys where they shouldn't have. But all of these picks, that the significant ones, were moved on to get. So they had their board, they stayed true to it. And the last comment I'll make on this is all of these guys are quality individuals, very, very high character guys. I don't know if you guys saw the interview they did with Laken Tomlinson after he was drafted, but my goodness, he's a dual major that wants to get into, he wants to be a neurosurgeon after he gets out of football, was raised in, I believe it was Jamaica, and his grandfather paid for his whole family to come over to Chicago, and he ended up taking like an hour and a half commute one way to get to his high school. Just an extremely high quality kid. Amir Abdullah he won the hardest worker or the best offseason workout award 2 years running from Nebraska. I think most of these guys were team captains, just very, very high quality guys. And they're Caldwell guys. They're Jim Caldwell guys that are going to come in. They're going to be great in the locker room, great in the community, and they're going to come in and work.
I'm pretty sure when you're drafting guys from Duke and Stanford, you're going to get very quality individuals from those schools. My question to you is, and I thought at 28, When it came down on the board, Malcolm Brown was still sitting there. I thought that was a match made in heaven. Fairley gone, Sue gone. Why did they not make the Malcolm Brown pick, in your opinion?
I thought the same thing. Like I said in the beginning, I kind of went over this draft a couple times. Like, what, they zigged when they should have zagged. What were they doing? But for one, I don't know where they had Tomlinson on their board. I heard one guy say he had Laken Tomlinson at number 10 overall on his board. So it could just be that, you know, they might have really liked Malcolm Brown, but they just had Tomlinson higher. If we want to look at Malcolm Brown specifically, he had some issues that I've heard with work ethic. He had took plays off, which is not uncommon for a defensive tackle. You know, they're big guys. They're doing a lot on each individual play. But he took plays off. And I heard that his future in the NFL is more of a plugger. He's not a guy that's going to push the pocket very much. He's not going to be able to penetrate all that much. And they must have looked at that and thought, you know, we can just get that kind of role in our defense. We can get that role a little bit later. And let's take the guy that we think can protect Stafford, that can establish the run game. That's another recurring theme in this draft. If you look at picking up Tomlinson, picking up Abdullah, picking up the fullback that we got in the fifth round, they're trying to build that running game. They want to be able to get a little more balance, not rely on Stafford to sling it so many times a game. So I think it was a combination of getting what they felt the best player was for the goal that they were looking at the end of the draft.
All right, guys. Let's before we wrap up, there were a couple of emails sent to nextfanup@gmail.com, superfan applications, and that's how you can do it. Our first one here comes to us from Neil, who writes, "Hi, Jay. Qualifications. Well, I've followed Washington since the Super Bowl of 1984, when the NFL first started on our Channel 4 TV station here in the UK. So it's another UK superfan, which I am all for.
The British invasion.
The more Brits we can get in on this podcast with their funny accents, it's fantastic. We do, Neil, have a Washington super fan. We haven't heard from him yet, but we will let him know that he's on notice, as we do have another application in the books for a Washington super fan. And this one from Cody, who writes, "I recall hearing you need an Arizona super fan. That is absolutely true, Cody. While I'm actually a Falcons fan, I am able to do the research and invest the time needed to fill the void." Cody, I appreciate the sentiment there, but that's not exactly what we're looking for from the super fans. We want people that are going to be able to bring the passion that we just brought today when talking about our teams. I mean, if you can't get up on a podium and rant about how poorly done an investigation was as it centered around your team, then, I appreciate it. But that's more of what we're looking for. We need guys that are passionate about their team, because that's what we're here for you folks. This is by the fans.
It's more likely than not you're not right for the job.
It's more probable than not. The job is not for you.
A preponderance of evidence that this guy
you need to continue through the catch. Anyway, so
he's already deflated his hopes, though.
Oh gosh. All right. On this note, keep those applications coming in. nextfanup@gmail.com. Reach out to us on Twitter @NFU Podcast, on Facebook, search NextFanUp, or go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We will have another episode sometime next week. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Adam, for joining me on my rant and allowing me to have it. I hopefully didn't take up too much of the time. I think we covered everything that needed to be covered. And as we just heard, you guys got your shots in. So keep them coming. I'll take them. It's more probable than not that I'm going to be ranting about this again next week, hopefully for a shorter amount of time, though.
Well, it's been fun, and it's cheaper than therapy, so.
And with that, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.